Hello and welcome to History Gap. I'm Lucy Hunt.
And I'm Georgia McAndrew. This show is dedicated to the women of history.
A little disclaimer, we are not historians, just two girls who love a good story.
Damn right we do. And today we're talking about women from history who really pioneered the way stories are told today. This is the story of Nellie Bly, a feminist, journalist, icon, queen and world explorer. Are you ready, Lucy?
Sounds right up my street.
Nellie Bly, whose real name was Elizabeth Cochrane, was born in Pennsylvania, May 5th, 1864, a Taurus. If we believe in astrological signs, Tauruses are known for their outspokenness, strong sense of wrong and right, and being fiercely headstrong. I should know, because I am a Taurus also. Now, in the 19th century, these weren't quite the traits men looked for in women, and hell, some don't even to this day. Lucy, what star sign are you?
I'm a Pisces, sensitive soul, will cry at anything.
Ah, fish. Yeah, little
fish time.
Loves a weep.
Always weeping, this gal. Do you relate to your star sign?
I do, in some ways, but I'm actually I'm just on the cusp of between
so
an Aries and a Taurus. Yeah, and sometimes I feel like I have more Aries vibes than Taurus, because I feel like they are really, really stubborn and stuff, and I just quite like an easy life.
Yeah, fair.
So the reason I mentioned being a Taurus is that in the case of Nellie Bly, these qualities shine through every aspect of her story, making her an incredibly interesting and fearless figure in women's history. The beginning of her story starts with a bit of a fractured upbringing, which all starts with the death of her father, Michael Cochrane. Nellie Bly was Michael's 13th daughter out of a total of 15 kids across two marriages. He was a busy man.
He was a busy guy.
He's a fertile man. So Nellie was a product of Michael's second marriage to her mother, Mary Jane. Mr. Cochrane owned a lucrative mill and served as an associate justice to their local county. So in general, they had a modest and comfortable life. That was until the year of 1870, when Mr. Cochrane had an untimely and sudden death when Nellie was just age 6. His death would leave the family in hard times, especially as Mr. Cochrane was busy making all these children, he forgot to write a will.
Always forgetting about the important stuff.
Yeah, always forgetting about the paperwork, was our Mr. Cochrane. So, unable to maintain the land, the family had to leave the mill behind, moving the family onto Pittsburgh to join Nellie's brothers. So, Pittsburgh in the 1880s was an industrialized city known for its iron and steel and was becoming a complex urban landscape of mill and mining towns and residential communities. At just age 18, Nellie was navigating city life as a woman. In America at this time, education rates and literacy rates for women were on the rise. Nellie was an avid reader. She would often read local newspapers in order to keep up with current affairs. And on this particular day, she was reading the Pittsburgh Dispatch. The Pittsburgh Dispatch was a leading newspaper operating from 1846 to 1923. It was politically independent and particularly known for its in-depth court reporting ran by an editor called George Madden. It would be Mr. Madden who received a strongly worded letter from an extremely pissed off Nellie. In this paper, Nellie had read and strongly disagreed with an article. It was titled, What Women Are Good For. Lucy, can you take a guess on what this article thought women were good for?
Let me guess. Was it something to do with delivering babies? Or was it something to do with being in the kitchen or something crazy?
Yeah, something crazy like that, you know? Just serving all the men around them.
Yeah,
sort of
serving in some way. Serving some man in some way.
Yeah, serving everyone apart from themselves is exactly what women were good for, according to this article. So the article reflected many attitudes of the time and had even called working class women a monstrosity and insisted that women were only fit for domestic duties.
Wow.
Deeming it sexist, Nellie expressed these views so eloquently in the letter and so impeccably that George was so impressed with her writing that he offered her a job as a journalist for $5 a week.
Wow, change your tune, George.
Yeah, it's a bit of a flex, isn't it, for old Nellie?
But also, as soon as there's something of value to you, it's like changing your tune. I see you.
Yep.
I see you for what you are.
A man with motives.
Yeah, literally.
Though at this point it wasn't unknown that women could work in the field of journalism, it was still relatively rare, but many of those who did would write under pen names in order to be deemed more credible and as to not discourage men from reading female writing. And so was born the pen name Nellie Bly, because as we already know, her real name is Elizabeth Cochrane. What do you think your pen name would be, Lucy?
At this time, would it be a man's name that you would go for, essentially?
Yes, or a sort of ambiguous name as well.
I see. Oh. Mm. Maybe I would just choose something very simple to kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, Luca Hunt or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just change a little
Lucas
letter.
Lucas Hunt.
Yeah. Actually, it has a ring to it, to
Yeah,
be fair.
What would yours be?
I'd probably go Joe, I think. Joe Andrews or something?
Joe Andrews. Nice. That is very unsuspicious. It's very plain and
straight down the middle. Yeah. And the second name is also male, so I feel like
true.
That would
double male in it.
That would hook in the misogynist men.
They'd go, that's definitely a man. There's no way.
Little did they know. And that's what I would love about it. From the get-go, Nellie dived into writing the female experience. Amongst her first articles were topics such as the working and living conditions for working-class women. And this was at a time when a women's contribution to a newspaper was generally confined to the women's pages. So Nellie was really given a rare opportunity to report on wider issues beyond the domestic sphere. And she basically became kind of like the first female investigative journal. So she was sent on location to Mexico, where she reported on corruption and conditions of the poor. And these articles were found to be so offensive in Mexico that she was actually expelled from Mexico.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Partly for their exposing nature and partly also because they were written by a person with breasts. Yes. Quite, didn't like that, basically, in Mexico.
They were like, stop calling us poor and get out here with your tits.
Literally. And unfortunately, these attitudes in Mexico also were very wide in Pittsburgh as well. In fact, many advertisers of the Pittsburgh Dispatch, who Nellie works for, began to withdraw their funding from the paper because they found Nellie, a woman, writing on these topics to be too offensive to their male opinions. Ugh. Bit of a dick move from the advertisers, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Although clearly a skilled and eloquent writer, to keep side with the advertisers, Nellie's editor demoted her to work on stories about social engagements and fashion. Pigeonholed and unfulfilled, Nellie moved to New York to work for the New York World.
Well, I feel like that's an upgrade, you know? Nellie, go get your dreams.
Yeah, and also she's like coming out of her teenage years doing this.
Unreal. I think even as an 18-year-old today, you'd be like so monumentally proud of being able to do that. But an 18-year-old back then, as a woman, wow. I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah. It's crazy impressive.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like a really big thing in publishing specifically, because it wasn't really until the 19th century that women could legally publish things in America. And so as a result, there's so many women's work out there that we'll just never see.
That's
true. Which is really sad.
That is sad. Especially because advertisers like that would just pull offers. So no, even if an editor maybe perhaps wanted to take the risk, they were perhaps tied to editors who wouldn't allow that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, just if there was any sort of person who could influence the paper's outgoings and had to have views, they didn't want women in the paper, you know, their hands were kind of tied.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is sad. And I think it's also really interesting that women publishers at the time were paid a third of what men got.
I mean, so, you know, it's similar today, but yeah.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I looked up that only a third of newspapers in the UK are edited by women.
Really? Today?
Today.
Wow.
And also I thought it was interesting that she does all this incredible investigative work and they're like, do you know what you should cover now? Fashion and domestic things.
You know what? You look like you like a nice top.
Yeah. And it's also just like, it was probably around the time where, like, I don't know, like consumerism and women and what women should be interested in was kind of probably flourishing. And obviously you still see that today.
Yeah.
With those like really like weird sections of newspapers clearly aimed at women. It's all about like diets and stuff, and you're like, oh cool, yeah, this is what I want to read about today.
yeah, definitely. And it's interesting, I mean, it's obviously what people deem as safe for women to talk about, probably especially back then.
So at just age 23, Nelly was one of the few female journalists in NYC, and she was eager to make a bold first impression. For years, dark whispers had spread across New York City about one of the city's most notorious institutions. The building, looming and large, sat on what is now Roosevelt Island, but at the time was called Blackwell's Island. This island was home to a number of public institutions, such as a poorhouse, a hospital for infectious diseases, and most notably, an insane asylum for women.
Quick check. What is a poorhouse?
A poorhouse was like basically slave labor. Like you would go to these places and work for free, but you would get like a bed and food.
Accommodation.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, you know, an Oliver Twist.
Yes. It's like that. Got you.
Stories of the bewitched and the becrazed inhabitants, of shrills and screams, were well known around New York City. But there were also these ugly rumours that had kind of been around for a while in the 19th century about asylums in general. And basically people in New York had suspected that the asylum was an unsafe, unkind place of abuse and cruel medical treatments. And for listeners, I just did one of those, like, what are they called, Lucy?
Quotation marks. Like a quote.
Yeah, on the word medical, because these methods we would probably now consider as inhumane. So Nelly, seeing an opportunity for a story, decided she would have herself, literally have herself, committed to the asylum for 10 days to expose its going-ons. How brave is that?
That is so brave. I would personally not sign myself up for that.
How terrifying would that be?
How much should they pay her?
Oh, yeah, I know.
This is one of those questions where people go, how much would someone have to pay you to do this?
Totally. I think, obviously, she probably only got paid a third of what a man would get paid, naturally.
That's true.
But she went in on the assurance that she would get taken out of the asylum after 10 days. And I just feel like, would I have had the trust in the male newspaper people to actually get me out of the asylum? I just don't know.
Also, what if they had like a bit of a competitor at the news agency and they're like, oh, that's a great way to get rid of her.
Yeah.
Like,
go work at a story in the asylum.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, terrifying. But she was obviously well aware of the views that society held towards mental illness and women specifically. So Nelly cleverly faked having hysteria. So under a fake name, she took a room in a boarding house and began acting, well, crazy. She refused to sleep, she wandered the halls, she yelled and she screamed. And with only a couple of days, the boarding house owners submitted her to the police, where she was seen by a doctor and diagnosed with dementia and some other psychological issues, and sent off to the asylum she did go.
Well, the plan worked.
The plan worked, and like alarmingly quickly.
Yeah, I wonder how she felt in that moment. Like, yes, I'm getting the story, or like, oh, I've actually got to do this now.
Yeah, but I also just think it's amazing that she was like, I just know if I'm loud and I'm just act a bit crazy that for sure they're just going to cart me off.
Yeah,
because
that's true. Yeah,
there was like nothing more disruptive than like a woman who wasn't, you know, quiet and calm. So in its conception, Blackwell Asylum was built to hold 1,000 patients. In 1887, when Nelly arrived, the asylum housed more than 1,600 people with just 16 doctors. Conditions were poor, but so too was society's general view on mental health, so it wasn't too surprising. Asylums like Blackwell's were actually considered curiosities where thrill seekers and others could visit those thought mad. Doctors and staff had very little training or understanding of psychological illnesses, and in many cases, little sympathy. As a result, they often ordered harsh and brutal treatments that did little to heal and much to harm.
That is one doctor for every 100 people.
Quick maths, by the way. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I actually got my calendar. I was just saying, I got my calendar out. I got my calculator out to fact check.
Still,
that.
I bow down to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, how crazy is that? And also horrific that I think it was the same with Bedlam in London, wasn't it? That you could pay to go look at all the crazy people.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
And when you would visit, is it like a day visit or is it like you could stay there?
It would be like a tour. So you would just like go down round and see the different wings and things, and hear the stories of the inhabitants, I imagine.
Interesting. It's pretty dark. Some people have, yeah, dark interests like that, as well as, you know, maybe what they would consider as factual research, as some people just
yeah.
have.
And it's mental to think that there would obviously be some people very mentally unwell in there, and that the way they viewed mental health was so backwards that they thought, oh, instead of this is a shame, we'll just charge tourists to come and like behold them.
They literally made it into a public platform.
Yeah, it's like a zoo, but for mentally unwell people. So now that she's in the asylum, Nellie was on a mission to befriend and speak to inmates, learning of abuse as she went. As found in Nellie's report, some patients reported being forced to take ice-cold baths, remain in cold, wet clothes for hours, leading to fevers and flus. Others reported being tethered to other patients and forced to pull heavy carts, or forced to sit absolutely still on benches for 12 hours or more, as well as physical and sexual violence and threats. Now, they also uncovered that many of the patients were not actually unwell. In fact, they were immigrants who'd been caught up in a law enforcement system and put in the hospital, or people who were victims of poverty in a society with no social nets. Nellie suspected many had entered the asylum of sane mind, but had left broken and traumatised.
Wow.
Horrified, Nellie got to writing her report for the world, which is now known as 10 Days in a Madhouse, and is known in history for bringing around fundamental change in the improvements of patient care in mental health within the US. Nellie generated critical conversations that led to reform and attitude change. In the asylum, abusive staff members were fired, translators were hired to assist immigrant patients, and changes were made to the system to help prevent those who did not actually suffer from mental illness from being committed. 7 years after the expose was published, the asylum closed.
It's pretty incredible, because it must have felt traumatic to do that for her, but 10 days of work and the impact that had on probably like so many people basically from that point onwards.
Yeah.
And even, you know, I can imagine people stuck in there for years and having no hope. And, you know, this kind of gives you that glimmer of hope, being like, will this change? Like, and it did change. And also, like, on the other side of, like, maybe you met Nellie when you were in there and you would think, is this woman going to be able to help us?
I know. There's a few things I thought about when I was reading this. The first is, like, obviously, she knew she was going into a place of violence. And she would be totally vulnerable to that. And I just think that is so incredibly brave. But there was another, I read, there was a part in her report which I thought was so interesting. It's just this quote here, Lucy. Do you want to read it?
"But here, let me say one thing. From the moment I entered the insane ward on the island, I made no attempt to keep up with the assumed role of insanity. I talked and acted just as I would do in normal life. Yet, strange to say, the more sanely I talked and acted, the crazier I was thought to be by all."
Interesting. So interesting. And it's just like, what hope would you have? Like, she's a completely sane woman in there and everyone is just like, no, you're crazy.
Yeah. And also at that point, I wonder if she thought, like, am I actually going to get out? It must have been frustrating for the people in there who weren't struggling with anything and in there for you know, another reason, basically.
Yeah.
Because then no one's ever taking your voice seriously. And, you know, that just goes to show that, like, that's how they were getting treated either way.
Yeah. And I think it is, as you said there, like, no one's taking you seriously. And obviously we know now, like, in healthcare and in mental health as well, the stigma that women face about getting taken seriously by medical professionals and things. And I guess you could just see this happening here, and for some reason the people that worked in the asylum managed in their brains to, I don't know, justify treating some sane people or even mentally unwell people the way in such horrific ways.
But also as well, I think you could go in there completely sane and be driven to feel like you're the one that's got something wrong with you, because no one is listening to you. And actually, how frustrating would that be?
Yeah, you're getting like institutionalized,
to not be able to communicate,
gaslight,
and then you're like, is there something wrong with me? Yeah, exactly. You are getting gaslighted.
And also how scary it must have been for, you know, obviously they said they popped in translators to assist immigrant patients who were literally just there because they, you know, they were in poverty and they had nowhere else to go and they just ended up there. How terrifying that would have been, not speaking the language and all these horrendous things happening to you.
You just wouldn't understand, like, why you're being treated like that.
And Nelly in her career would go on to report on loads of different things. She did things in World War II, from reporting from Europe, lots of other investigative stuff. When I was researching, I read this quote from a journalist called Brooke Kreuger, who wrote a biography on Nelly. And she said, "I can't imagine the editors of her days were excited about the idea of throwing a woman onto the front page as often as she got there. But she got there nearly every time she wrote, which in itself is astounding. It's hard to understand today what that really meant in its context." I'm so sad that I've just learned about Nellie Bly at age 26.
If I am going to have like a board at the end of this of like women that I want to like stick up as inspiration, she's definitely going on the board.
Definitely. A quick note about our dialogue. In some cases, we can't know the exact details, so some of it has been dramatisation based on historical research.
I'm Lucy Hunt.
And I'm Georgia McAndrew, and we've brought you History Gap, a collection of stories that we feel passionate about.
We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Please leave a comment in the reviews and let us know if there's a story you'd love us to cover.
Subscribe and see you soon.
Bye.